Welcome to the I'm Still Here podcast. I'm your host, Heather Jose. In 1998, at the age of 26, I was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. It changed everything for us, but I'm still here. And we're here to talk to you about life with metastatic disease. We know it's not easy. We know that there are challenges that never get talked about, but we're here to walk with you through them, to show you some hope, some inspiration, and to help you make a plan so that you can join me in saying, I'm still here.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. It's good to be back here.
It is.
So today I want to talk about the details.
Go back to the beginning.
Let's go back to the beginning. The most common question I get is, what did I do? And a lot of times that is about treatment. Sometimes it's about other things. I love you guys, but you don't really want to go back episodes. So we're just going to keep bringing it to you.
Well, and this is a good one. So if you are, or if you're, you know, sending this to somebody else, or, you know, who is this chick here? You can give them this one as kind of a beginning episode to introduce Heather instead of going all the way back.
Yeah. So I'm Heather.
I'm Larry.
Then, in December of 1998, I was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. Same thing, right? With innumerable bone mets, which means that I know that it was many, many places, and I asked them to stop telling me, which should tell you a little bit about kind of how I took on my treatment right with that statement. But it definitely sternum, pelvis, spine, all over. To the point where, my first doctor told me to get my affairs in order. So we weren't just dealing with a little bit of cancer. We were dealing with a ton of it. So I was 26 and it was 1998. So the things that I did are not necessarily the things that are being done today. I was enrolled in a clinical trial for one phase of my treatment, and I was thinking about that because I think that sometimes people listen to these episodes and think, oh, that's the thing. Like, that's going to be the thing that is going to, you know, get me to where she is. Clinical trials, what they also learn in them is that they aren't the way to go, right? Yep. And that was the case for my clinical trial.
So, which was what?
I did a double stem cell transplant, so, which is them harvesting my stem, making sure that my cells were not cancerous, harvesting them, doing high-dose chemotherapy, and then reintroducing the cells. So,
and we talked to your oncologist about that, if you caught that episode, but we talked to the, and she just literally said, you know, more people were dying from this than we were saving.
Right.
So it had to have been, you know, you were pretty special in that you were young, very strong, going through that, and it destroyed you at that age and being in that condition. So I do understand that, but yeah.
And I understand also the want or need to kind of find the thing, but that's not it. No. There's, if I were starting today, some of the treatments, possibilities are so much better. I mean, so many of them are better now in terms of being able to live with this disease. So, so it was 25 years ago. That's really important to know. It was invasive ductal carcinoma. So I think that was one of the things that we talked very little about, actually, what type of cancer it was specifically. But that's pretty common for breast cancer. The bigger thing was that I was triple positive. So ER, PR, HER2 positive. Now, again, those things can change over time. And I think as we went on and I was on Herceptin for a while, there was some talk about the fact that I was probably not strongly HER2 positive. So, I mean,
which in the realm of metastatic cancer, the triple positive is the jackpot in the crap, or the pot of crap. You know, being triple positive, there's many more treatments, there's many more opportunities, there's more people that are triple positive, therefore there's more studies done on them.
Yep.
It's just the truth of it. And yep. Not that you were lucky, but you were lucky enough to be triple positive.
Yeah. I had a 5-centimeter tumor. Mm-hmm. So it was not small. It was located right behind my nipple. My nipple was retracted. I didn't know that that was a sign of breast cancer at the time. And it had happened while I was pregnant and even more while I was breastfeeding. So it just seemed like kind of a part of my body changing during the time that I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
But
and that's why the, you know, from what you now know is a, and I tell my kids about this, you know, we didn't have the internet to go, what is this?
Yeah.
What, you know, to type in there and go, I'm having this. And now today you can get an answer spit right back at you. Back then we didn't have that.
No.
You'd have to make a phone call or you'd have to
well, actually,
find the right medical.
Yeah. So I'm an occupational therapist and I remember I had an anatomy and physiology book that was pretty detailed about a lot of things. And one day it literally, this was years after the diagnosis, but I opened it and it literally was talking about breast cancer and the nipple retraction kind of thing.
Wow.
Which is just crazy, you know? So I guess I did have the information, but in occupational therapy, we weren't really talking about diseases in this respect. So.
And in today, literally, you type into Google nipple retraction.
It's
the first thing
that's going to
pop up is you should probably get checked out. That's one of the symptoms of breast cancer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Didn't have that.
Yeah. So, I was lucky in that we were able to quickly kind of find a path. We left the doctor who told me to get my affairs in order and found a doctor at the University of Michigan who helped us, you know, begin treatment.
Mm-hmm.
I started with having chemotherapy, which at the time was a little unusual because most people would start with surgery, where they would take the tumor out first and then go from there. So mm-hmm. I started with 4 rounds of adriamycin and Taxotere, which I know those are still happening today, and all the Taxol family is really big. So we followed that with the double stem cell transplant, which we alluded to earlier, the high-dose chemotherapy. What the thought is with that is that they'll, you know, they're going to take your stem cells that will grow into all the cells that you need, and they're going to give you high-dose chemotherapy. They're going to kill off everything. Cancer and, but also good things.
All fast growing cells.
And then they're going to give you your stem cells. They're going to wait for those counts to bottom out, which is the horrible part of a stem cell transplant. And then they're going to reintroduce those cells to you and wait for them to grow and hope that they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that first inpatient. I was inpatient for 3 weeks. And then I kind of went home and recovered for a little while. And then we did a second one, which was outpatient. The chemotherapy drugs were different on both of those. Mm-hmm. So, and then I started my kind of after chemo drugs. Well, I guess I should say I did a double mastectomy after the stem cell.
Without reconstruction.
Mm-hmm. That was my choice. I just didn't want to take the time to do, or time and energy, I guess, would be what it is in terms of, I knew that the recovery from reconstruction was pretty serious and hard and
lengthy.
And things were going fairly well and I just wanted them to keep going that way. So I didn't want to kind of divert my body's attention to having to heal from what I consider an elective surgery at that time. Mm-hmm. So, and then I did radiation. I did 30 rounds of radiation after the double mastectomy. And then kind of started on the other forms of treatment in terms of tamoxifen was my first line of kind of that therapy that would block, you know, either estrogen or whatever was feeding the cancer. I started that along with, I was on Zometa, which is a bone strengthener. And I think that was it. I was on tamoxifen for a couple of years. And then I was on Arimidex for also a couple of years. So again, we changed to the Arimidex because of a slight progression in a scan.
A possible slight progression.
Yeah.
We know now.
Yeah.
I mean, those scans are not exact, as right. exact as they are today.
Right. And at the time, I was not doing PET scans back then. I was doing CAT mm-hmm. scans and bone scans. Yeah. And then in 2004, so like 4 years after I started the Arimidex, I started on Fosledex, or fulvestrant is also called. So Fosledex is an estrogen receptor antagonist. And if you read about it, basically its job is to block those estrogen receptors so that estrogen can't get in there. So mm-hmm. we can't feed the cancer. I am still on Fosledex. So I've been on it since I actually pulled out my little cheat sheet, and it is, I started it in June of 2004. So
20 years.
Yeah. It's been a long time. That's been a fairly easy drug for me. When I first started it, I was also still on the Zometa. And then in 2008, again, scan showed possible progression. We added Herceptin. Mm-hmm. And then I stayed on that for a number of years until 2013. We figured out that I had osteonecrosis of the jaw. And also, I think the Herceptin I ended up stopping because my ejection fraction was kind of messing around a little bit too.
And your heart.
So, yes. Anyway, so now I'm just Fosledex.
So that's the treatment side of what you did, and the, you know, genetic side of what you had.
I should say too, I don't have any genetic markers. Like I did mm-hmm. do the genetic testing. I've done it twice. So I'm not BRCA. I don't have any of those. And then even, I don't know what they're looking for nowadays, but mm-hmm. I don't have any genetic markers.
So why don't you also tell us about what you've done, what you did, and kind of why, say, just nutritionally? Because a lot of people are interested in that.
Yeah, nutritionally.
The quick version,
obviously. I just, my whole emphasis for everything was like how to not feed cancer. So again, knowing that my cancer was hormone driven and there are natural hormones in foods, the goal was to eliminate those foods. So meat, dairy, that type of thing, eliminated. And then also just trying to build up the strongest immune system I could build. So by eating, you know, giving my body good fuel. So whole grains. I did do some fish, lots of fruits and vegetables, and just really trying to eat good sources of quality food that would fuel my body, build my immune system, and not give cancer, mm-hmm. my cancer, any fuel.
And you were pretty strict on that, with the exception of, you know, when you're doing a double stem cell transplant, or even during chemotherapy, when you're just trying to get food in, you ate whatever would go in.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever you could hold down in some days like that.
Yeah.
But for the most part during that treatment, you were very, I don't want to say, well, strict on yourself.
I was very
yourself.
Intentional.
Yeah, intentional. Yeah.
About it, yes. Mm-hmm. And I didn't view it as a punishment yeah. or I have to do this. I wasn't like boo-hooing about it. I chose to do it.
Yeah.
And I really, really, really feel like it's so important. Honestly, like if you don't want to make changes, don't. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. But if you do make changes, go. Like, believe in the changes and don't beat yourself up about them. I think so much of this always comes back to mindset to me in terms of, like, what we think is so powerful, and so kind of doing something but begrudgingly, I feel like can negate the benefits. Mm-hmm. So, and it doesn't, I would reward myself, like good scans, we'd go out to dinner or whatever. It wasn't 24/7 every time, but it was, I did make a lot of considerable changes.
Yeah.
Really early on.
And you start living this different, you know, eating different foods and doing this, you kind of learn more about food and more about
sure.
what things contain what. And, you know, during treatment, for that year of treatment that, mm-hmm. that she was in treatment, really didn't stray from that much. And then beyond that, we started eating smarter
yes.
options of
yes.
things. For example.
Yeah. Again, for me, it's about sourcing good food. So we live in a rural area of Michigan, and I realized that I literally could talk to the farmer in the next road over who was raising cattle, right? Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh yeah, here they are on the grass, and we're not putting anything into them. And it was also, my daughter was, you know, really starting to eat foods. She was 14 months old when I was diagnosed. So it was kind of planning for her too. Like, I want to make good choices that are just the best kind of quality food for all of us. So we actually, I think the first meat I returned to was the grass-fed.
It was.
I still, at the time, I didn't do chicken at all. We did not do a lot of chicken especially when Sydney was young. Chicken at that time, again, it's all about the source and what they're putting into it and all that kind of stuff. So,
and again, when we did do chicken, when we returned to that, we bought it from
people that we knew
literally just raised it a couple houses down.
Yeah.
And we knew what was going into
it. What they were feeding it and that they weren't putting in anything else. So we learned, actually, I feel like my cancer was really kind of at the beginning of like the Whole Foods, all of that. I know Whole Foods had been around, but just the beginning of like foods becoming a little more available in the grocery stores. But we would do things like, I would pick blueberries in the summer and we would freeze a bunch of them, or same kind of thing for, you know, strawberries, raspberries, things like that, where it's almost like just returning to the roots of good quality food, right? Yeah. We found a co-op, I remember, that would literally come into our area. You could order out of a catalog and get things like that. So it was just really about sourcing good quality ingredients.
That's the key.
Right. And we did... I mean, I will say, milk was gone. I grew up drinking milk and I loved milk, but I had an incident in the midst of the stem cells where I tried it because it sounded good and it just tasted terrible. And that for me was like, yeah, I'm done with that.
And I was never a big milk drinker.
Yeah.
My kids didn't want milk.
Yeah. So Sydney, we did soy milk when Sydney was little. And then Ty, when he joined us, Ty just has never liked milk. He's always mm-hmm. loved water. So
yep.
it just, that's worked out for us.
Yeah.
But.
So now, what about, people also ask about fitness. What, you know, what were you able to do, or what was your condition when you were 25 prior to knowing that these cells were going crazy in your body? What would you say condition-wise you were in shape-wise?
I was in okay shape. I mean, I'd had a baby 14 months prior to that. I had a job that, you know, I was walking in and out of schools every day. I was up and down off the floor. So I wasn't sedentary, but I don't think I was, like, actively working out.
Right.
I was in okay shape, but not great shape. And then with the cancer, I mean, I will say I did go all in on, like, I took a leave of absence from my job. I felt that it was now or never in terms of making changes. And so I did go all in on them. And as part of that, I did start, you know, mostly walking. I did Tai Bo, I remember, Billy Blanks. But just working
out. Joined the gym.
That was the joining the gym was so great for me, because coming off of all of this treatment, your life is pretty scheduled and you feel like, oh, this treatment is killing cancer, right? So then when they, you know, I was on a medicine still, but like a couple of medicines, but it doesn't feel the same in terms of the safety net. So joining the gym to me really helped me with my routine and feeling like, oh, I'm still doing something. Like I still have another something helping me, you know, again, to kill cancer. So, yeah, it was at that point that I really was probably as strong as I've been since I was in high school, when I was lifting and an athlete in high school. So, joined a gym, was really focused on strength as well as, you know, just being active.
So you've alluded to a couple of the things. I mean, when we go back to nutrition, you were talking about, you know, don't do it if you don't believe in it. And and not only what you did, you believed in it, which brought bringing me to the mental side of things. And same with fitness. Just going for a walk may not improve your cardiorespiratory endurance just dramatically, but it not only gave you a chance for your heart to pump a little faster and your lungs to breathe a little bit more, but it also gave you opportunity to mentally check in with your body and make improvements. So I don't even know if you can talk to us about the mental stuff that you did that I believe was so important.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it goes back to me thinking, what can I control and what can't I control? And I didn't feel like I could control a cancer cell necessarily.
Sure.
But I was like, just how can I give myself any opportunity to maybe get a leg up on this? And I knew, I think I just realized very early on that that the information coming in was so much to deal with and processing all of that. What people were telling me, what the statistics were, all of these things were just overwhelming. So I just kind of went into this protective mode and was like, okay, I have to control what I'm thinking about. And so, I mean, I could use things like nutrition and fitness to say, oh, this is a check-in on that I did it kind of thing. And this is one more thing to making myself become healthier. It's weird. I mean, I thought a lot about being as healthy as possible in the midst of cancer. And I remember having conversations with my best friend about that. And we were talking about, like, literally how healthy we were. And it was because, like, the focus was like, okay, I can do these things and I feel good about them and I know they're good for me. And it just kind of steamrolled from there. And then also, like, you know, we've talked on here before about statistics, and I just was writing about it again this last week. Like, it's so, we just believe people, and we believe them because we've been taught to respect their authority, or we've been taught to, you know, not question people, especially women. But when we look at statistics, like, yeah, they're out there and you can ask for them, but you also cannot ultimately know that you will fall into one side or the other. You might have a 99% chance of living and you might still die. But on the opposite side of that, you might have less than 1% and you're still here.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I learned early on, was like, okay, nobody gets to determine that. Nobody else. Like, that, you know, and I don't know if I can determine it either, but man, am I going to realize that somebody didn't just get to tell me that I'm dying, you know?
And what, you know, what I've learned in the 25 years since that is, you know, from your oncologist, from reading about this, is our immune system kills cancer.
Yeah.
Medicines help with that. It's similar to the antiviral medicines we have when we get the flu and stuff. They don't kill viruses. They suppress it. They allow your immune system to come in and those T cells to come in and actually kill them.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar in cancer, now that I know more about this now, is our immune system is what's keeping us cancer-free or keeping us alive. It's our immune system, and you got to do everything. Well, what controls our immune system? It's our brain.
Mm-hmm.
Our brain controls our immune system, and to discount the power of our brain and the power of thought, the power of all of this, is, I think, just a huge misstep. And you, without really any of that knowledge, were just able to take it to a high level. Everything coming in and going out was focused on that.
And thought about, right?
Yeah.
The other thing I realized was, like, it was like, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? Instead of, I know my doctor's going to do great things, you know, and what I know what other people, I know I can find people to give me some information and stuff, but what can I do? Like,
well, it's even taking the doctor. The doctor's giving you chemotherapy and other people are calling it poison and you're like, oh no, this is poison. This is killing the cancer. Exactly. I am, this is, and you were mentally picturing the cancer dying. Yeah. And I just thought, wow.
I did it. I actually did it my own. Like, I worked with a psychologist to do a visualization tape at the time for my stem cell transplants for those medicines coming in. Because I was very much like, man, let's go. Let's just bring it in. Yeah. And this is the other thing.
And starving your cancer, you know, by not eating those hormones. It's like, wow, yeah, that is so good. But, yeah.
But again, like, that kind of stuff is like, I don't understand why you wouldn't go all in on yourself. Doesn't cost anything. And in the end, you know what? If it doesn't work out, you're going to die. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
That was the diagnosis anyway.
That was, you know? Exactly. Oh, so yeah. For me, it was like, this is the way that I want to live. And I want to live with cancer, not have cancer control everything. I knew how scary. I mean, it was so scary, right? Yeah. But I was like, you see that cancer cannot da 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 da, and it's like, that's like just a schmarmy little look at it, you know what I mean? But it's like, okay, what can I do? And yeah. I have a brain and I'm going to use it.
No, and I think it's really difficult for anybody, even in Heather's, you know, situation back 25 years ago, to do this on your own. She had a great support network of people who would go and look things up for her. So she never had to know that information, but they were connected enough in order to, I do need to share this with you, but not this. Let me talk to your doctor without you in here. All of that kind of stuff happened behind both of our backs.
Yeah.
We had an unbelievable support network from our church as far as helping us out in many different ways.
Also not questioning us. Just allowing me to take the lead and like me saying, no, please don't bring me food. But if you want to, you know, get us a freezer so I can make stuff and freeze it, that'd be great. Okay. Yeah. You know.
And it just people, you know, drivers and just unbelievable. I mean, great best friends. I mean, that would do anything with you or for you. I mean, that is important. Yeah. Those things allowed you to take the mental side up a notch because it wasn't on your checklist of things to do in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
So I don't want to discount that because those people were enormously important in this especially this year of treatment. So
But beyond that, I will say, I mean, I think it is so important. Like, people, like, I got to know all these things about my cancer. I got to know all these things. Know about health. Learn about what mindset can do. Do that research. Get out of your portal, for God's sakes. Like, get out of these. I understand people find me by Googling me, and that was kind of the point of this whole podcast. Mm-hmm. But, like, get out of the stuff that's going to pull you under, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
That I can't tell you how important that is.
Yeah.
You know? So, it really matters. One other little fact I am postmenopausal. I've been menopausal since I started all of this. I did not ever have a surgery to have my ovaries or anything taken out. So
that is the nutshell of the fast version. We've obviously left a lot of details out right there, but if you're watching kind of for the first time or someone just sent you this, that's what she went through. Now, from there, we've broken down every part of that already, and we're going to continue to attack things in different ways and try to get information out. But that's Heather.
Yeah. And I will say, I think, again, some of the nitty-gritty that you guys want is not the nitty-gritty that I am focused on. Treatments are different. And they should be. Thankfully, they're different 25 years later,
we need to hit on some of the new treatments. I've been reading about them, and they are very interesting. But that will probably be in an interview type of thing of somebody else who can come on and tell us what we don't understand about it.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people are starting these treatments.
Yeah. So, all right. Thanks for listening to us.
See you next time.
Bye. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm still here. After all these years, after all these tears I shed, I'm still here, and I'm walking this earth like I should be. There was days that I didn't know if I would be. Yeah, yeah. Now I stand tall with my feet in the ground and my head in the clouds, 'cause I'm still here like I should be. Yeah, yeah, like I knew that I could be. Here we go, here we go. I'm still here. Oh, oh, oh. I'm here. Hey everyone, I hope you love this episode of I'm Still Here, and I wouldn't want you to miss out on what comes next. So be sure to rate, review, and follow this show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Especially if you found it helpful. We need all the shares, likes, stars, and love we can get. We'd also love to hear from you. Leave your comments and questions, and we'll incorporate them into future episodes. Have a great day.